They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
So what do you like? CEOs in trouble? Shakespeare in the park and also in trouble? Or something completely different, say, prestige area codes bought and sold? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It's Monday, June the 12th. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Today, more than usual, has been a day of CEO news out of corporate America. One high-profile departure, Jeff Immelt at General Electric, about whom more in a minute. And one, well, we don't know exactly what yet. The Uber Board of Directors has gotten and is said to have accepted without reservation a report prepared by former Attorney General Eric Holder on the culture at that company and CEO Travis Kalanick's role in it and its dysfunction. We've got our senior tech correspondent Molly Wood on the line to make me smart about all this. Hey, Molly.
Hey, Kai.
So help me out, first of all, with the basics. This Holder report, that is Eric Holder, former attorney general, whence did it come? How did we get here?
So this was an external investigation, of course, that came about as a result of the fairly explosive blog post that alleged sexual harassment and also just massive HR and internal mismanagement. So that led to several more complaints and this investigation. The report and the results of that report were delivered to the Uber board of directors on Sunday. So we don't yet know what is in it, but it contains a series of recommendations that reportedly the board says they're going to accept in total.
And in theory, unrelated to this report, right, there are reports out there that the founder of this company, Travis Kalanick, is going to take a 3-month leave of absence. What do we know about that?
Right. That Uber has not confirmed that, but there were reports coming out of the board meeting that Travis Kalanick had himself suggested a 3-month leave of absence that the board might approve. That comes, of course, after Travis Kalanick's mother, unfortunately, was recently killed in a boating accident. So it would not be an unexpected thing for him to do, even if the company weren't in trouble. I would caution that it should not necessarily be seen as a disciplinary action, given what's happened in his personal life. But it certainly wouldn't be a huge surprise, although it's not confirmed yet.
All right, so let me get you to something else now. We're going to hear real soon in the program, in fact, about Jeff Immelt and General Electric. Also, Mark Fields, this former CEO of Ford, was forced out. How is it that those two guys who made business mistakes lost their jobs, but Travis Kalanick, whose company has a culture which is far worse, still has his?
Yeah, I mean, I would give you two reasons. One is that the company is private at the end of the day. And so there isn't a shareholder pressure necessarily. There is certainly investor pressure. And we know that investors were calling Uber's board of directors and asking them to fulfill fiduciary responsibility because they are worried about it. But there isn't a well-documented, publicly available negative financial effect yet. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that this is, you know, it's very typical of Silicon Valley to have a company that is essentially built in the image of its founder. In this case, Travis Kalanick has a lot of board control. Most of it, in fact, majority voting rights. And so it's actually really hard for the board to get rid of him unless they all decide that he should go. And his personality is one of the things that they consider to be crucial to the success at Uber, or at least they have in the past.
Last thing, and then I'll let you go. Last time this company raised money, it was valued at plus or minus $69 billion. It is, let's say it again, a private company. What do you think the valuation, what would be going on in the open markets now were this a publicly traded company?
I mean, you got to think that they would take a hit based on the PR alone, but The other thing I'll say about Uber is we actually have no idea about the financial health of the company. And you know that Wall Street doesn't mind a lot of misbehavior as long as you're winning. If this business model is really successful, and frankly, we don't know the answer to that question, right, they might be fine.
Molly Wood, she is our senior tech correspondent. But more to the point, she and I do a podcast together, which we kind of like, and we hope you do too. It's called Make Me Smart. It drops on Tuesdays. Check it out. Apple Podcasts is where you get it. And I guess that's it. Molly, thanks.
Thanks, Kai.
All right. So General Electric, maybe the iconic American industrial conglomerate. For years, the standard by which other manufacturers in this economy were judged. The problem is that those years, when it was the standard, they weren't recent years. CEO Jeff Immelt resigned today under pressure, it's assumed, as GE has gotten bogged down. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Ganzer has that one.
For a long time, GE tried to be all things to all people with this slogan. Its commercials showed off a dizzying array of products, from light bulbs to airplane engines. GE has sold off some divisions, but it's still a global conglomerate. Barbara Noverini is an equity analyst at Morningstar. She says one troubled segment can drag down the whole company's profits. Exhibit A, the GE division that makes equipment for struggling oil drillers.
They're going to cut back on buying equipment and also, you know, cut back a little bit on services as well.
Another problem for conglomerates, every decision their CEOs make is huge. If they make a wrong bet, they lose millions. Mike Useem is a professor of management at the University of Pennsylvania.
They are spending sometimes $10 or $15 million a day with the cash that comes through.
Useem says GE needs to hunker down, focus on making products for industries like airplane engines and hospital equipment. Detlef Sudero is a senior lecturer at the International Business School at Brandeis.
These are million-dollar machines. There are huge margins on these.
Sudero says the profit margins on engines and ultrasounds will raise GE's bottom line if it can get rid of less productive divisions and not bring so many things to life. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
A possibly long-forgotten fact, GE was the founding sponsor of this broadcast, and as such got its We Bring Good Things to Life jingle in our theme song. That is a true story. You could look it up. On Wall Street today, mostly men, really. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Should you have found your way over to the website of the National Endowment for the Arts today, arts.gov is the link, you'd have been met with a landing page that said in part, quote, no NEA funds have been awarded to support this summer's Shakespeare in the Park production of Julius Caesar, end of quote. Suffice it to say that after an outcry from the right over a very Donald Trump-like Caesar, who, remember, is assassinated in the play, nobody wants to be responsible for funding that production. Delta Airlines and Bank of America have both pulled their support, the latest in a growing series of political minefields out there for brand-sensitive companies. Marketplace's Adrian Hill takes a look at how those companies are trying to find their way and what it might mean as we try to find entertainment.
Brands at some time are masters of their fates. Other times, not so much.
You know, right now, brands and companies are getting this constant pressure to lean one way or lean the other way.
Tim Calkins is a marketing professor at Northwestern's Kellogg School of Management. With social media, he says everything is public. Everyone has an opinion. So it's much, much more difficult for a brand to stay silent.
Now it's hard because by not leaning one way, you seem to be favoring the other side.
But leaning at all is going to cause blowback from the left, from the right, potentially from the White House. Some companies have just embraced it, taking clear political stands. But for a brand like Delta,
they want to be perceived as apolitical.
Americus Reed is a marketing professor at the Wharton School of Business. He says Delta likely judged it safer for that apolitical brand image to pull support from the Julius Caesar production, a play the New York Times critic says, quote, takes onstage Trump trolling to a startling new level. But Reed says if brands only want to support or advertise alongside content that plays it safe, it could change what gets created.
The content that will be more likely to be out there will be the type of content that doesn't take chances, that is not edgy.
And insisting on non-edgy, safe entertainment will look to some consumers like its own sort of leaning. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
Two German grocery chains have their eye on a bigger chunk of the American market. Aldi, which has been here since the late 1970s, wants to have 2,500 stores operating in the next 5 years. That's up from 1,700 or so today. Meanwhile, Lidl is going to open its first U.S. store later this week on the East Coast. The hallmark of both chains? Limited selection at steep discounts. A big growth area in grocery right now. Marketplace's Annie Baxter has more.
If you've lived in the Midwest, where Aldi U.S. started, you might be familiar with it already, especially from its old commercials.
Aldi, the stock-up store.
Still, Deanna Sheehan with Kantar Retail says to many people, Aldi may seem like it's coming out of nowhere.
And yet they've been here for over 30 years, earning their way into the space.
Sheehan says Aldi's prices tend to run around 30% below traditional grocery stores. She thinks Lidl, which is entering the U.S. market this week, might price as much as 50% below others to start out. Sheehan says these chains are driving behemoths like Walmart in particular to lower their grocery prices.
I think that Aldi has been giving them a run for their money, particularly in the Southeast. And as they see what Lidl does in Europe, they're realizing they want to be proactive instead of defensive.
Lidl's 10,000 stores in Europe make it a huge player in grocery there. Aldi and Lidl both save money on labor by doing things like having shoppers bag their own groceries. And their limited product selection of mostly in-house brands gives them more pricing power with their suppliers. That's according to Jim Hertel at Inmar's Willard Bishop Analytics. Hertel says there are trade-offs for shoppers. Compare 2,000 unique items at Aldi versus 50,000 at a traditional chain. But
if the price is attractive enough, you'll find it easy as a consumer to forego a national brand, especially when the quality of the product is what you expect.
Lidl's entry into the U.S. market will make it a competitor to Aldi and chains like Trader Joe's. But Hertel says the format, fewer products, mostly private label, still has room to grow. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
Regular listeners to this program know we've been spending a lot of time in Erie, Pennsylvania this year for our series, The Big Promise, how candidate Trump's campaign promises are playing out in an area that voted for him. Tourism may well not be the first thing that comes to mind when you think about the 2016 election and big campaign promises, but the economy in Erie depends a whole lot on what it has to offer. And as Marketplace's Erica Barris reports, this might be one of those areas where promises are better not kept.
I knew what to expect, and I was still surprised by what I saw as I turned off Interstate 90 toward Northeast, a small town in, yes, Northeast Erie. Grapes, miles of them, Concord grapes. This is Welch's country. It's also becoming wine country.
The wine industry is becoming more and more a part of, you know, what grapes are being grown in the region.
That's Mario Mazza. His family's been in the winemaking business since the 1970s. It was pretty lonely for vintners back then. But now?
We have a lot of growers that maybe started out primarily as juice grape growers, but are diversifying their acreage into having some wine varieties.
And Erie's wine region has become a key stop for tourists. More than 50,000 of them are expected to visit the area this year to sample the Rieslings and ice wines and test out the ahi tuna tacos and ceviche starting to show up at local restaurants. The summer months are known as
the golden 90 days.
That's John Oliver, head of Visit Erie. I met up with him at another tourist spot about 20 miles from wine country. The Bayfront, a convention center, has replaced an old asphalt shingle factory. The rundown pier has been transformed into a marina packed with yachts, and people can drink cocktails outside the hotels.
We are becoming dependent on tourism.
Oliver says tourists spend more than $1 billion a year in Erie, twice as much as 15 years ago. And there are thousands more summer jobs. Lots of those visitors come from nearby Canada, and Oliver says the Trump administration's push for tighter security at our borders is a concern.
You have a delay of an hour to get into the country just because you're trying to clear additional vetting. That's going to discourage people from coming here.
Also, proposed budget cuts could have a big impact on the region's natural attractions. Presque Isle State Park, with its lush forests, beaches, bike paths, and kayaking on the lake, attracts 4 million visitors a year. Erie depends on money from the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative to help protect the park's shoreline from erosion and monitor the water, after years of pollution from manufacturing made it unsafe to swim in. Under Trump, the initiative is facing a $300 million cut. Matt Green is operations manager for the park.
There's a very real impact or potential impact with those budget dollars potentially going away. That will inevitably have some sort of impact on the tourism that happens here.
Michael Sullivan knows the trade-offs between industry and environment well. Retired after years as a marketing executive at a paper company, he's now the keeper of Erie's 200-year-old lighthouse. Once a beacon for aviators, it's mainly been just a landmark on the lake. Last year, it opened to tourists. Sullivan takes care of the paperwork and the painting.
Look at you. You're wearing many hats today.
Oh, I'm doing it all.
Sullivan is also the welcoming committee for visitors. Erie is just a few weeks into the golden 90 days, and expectations are that it will be another robust season. It's next season and the one after. Worrying could begin. In Erie, I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
Coming up.
I think if people saw that, they would just immediately know, oh, she lives in New York City.
But how would they know? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials was off 36 points on this Monday, about a 10th percent, 21,235. NASDAQ off 32 points, about a half percent, 6175. The S&P 500 down 2 points, about a 10th, 24.29. Tech stocks dropped again today. Apple faded 2.33%. Alphabet, the parent company Google, gave up 0.8%. Amazon down 1.33% today. Phone companies in the doldrums this year rang higher today. Verizon dialed up 1%. AT&T buzzed up about 0.7%. As we told you earlier, General Electric CEO Jeff Immelt is stepping down after 16 years running that company. GE sparked up 3.5%. You gotta figure that hurts. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.21%. You're listening to Marketplace. Hi, everybody. It's Kai Rizdahl. Marketplace is here because these days it's essential to have an independent source explaining how the economy really works, not just for CEOs, but for everybody. Your support keeps this kind of reporting coming, and it's especially vital now at the end of our fiscal year. So please visit marketplace.org/donate to contribute and to keep us in your world every day. And thanks.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million-dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. On the podcast How I Built This, host Guy Raz talks to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt, failure, and how they were able to overcome setbacks on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. Listen early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more business content like this, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by public investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with public investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither public investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. It got lost in the political chaos, but the White House had wanted last week to be branded Infrastructure Week as a way to drum up support for the president's promised trillion-dollar infrastructure plan, a plan which, by the way, and it has to be said, hinges on the government spending $200 billion as a way to generate $800 billion more in private spending on infrastructure. Austin Golding was paying close attention through all that clutter. He is the president of his family's barge line down in Vicksburg, Mississippi. Austin, good to talk to you again.
Yeah, great to talk to you again.
So we talked to you right after the election. You were in wait and see. You were going to see what the Trump administration was going to deliver. How are you feeling now?
Well, you know, with respect to our industry, obviously having as much dialogue about infrastructure now is a nice change, and it is encouraging. I slowly have been getting details about how we're actually going to fund this thing. But to have the dialogue and have kind of the spotlight pushed back towards infrastructure is a welcome change for us.
What are you looking at? I mean, it's the stuff we've talked about before, I imagine, right? Dredging and locks and stuff that helps you get up and down the river.
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing I'm looking for through all this is locks and dams and that type of infrastructure. That type of infrastructure really doesn't just affect the commercial and industrial users within the waterways. It also has a great impact on flood protection and prevention and water supply. So I think that's probably the wisest and most impactful investment.
Last week, the president went out to Ohio, stood on a riverbank, pointed actually to a barge at one point and said, we're going to fix this. We're going to make it all better. Were you even watching or were you out on the river somewhere in the office working?
No, I was watching. I think everybody in our industry was plugged into that speech and liked what we heard. There's a lot of red meat for us. We gobbled it down. Now we're trying to digest it. And I think the hard work begins now. We have to figure out where $1 trillion is going to come from. And we're an active public-private partnership as we speak. So the funding that comes down the line, is it going to be more in that direction? Or where is the source for that funding going to come from is probably my biggest question now.
What about, speaking of being plugged in, the other things that are in the news, all the hearings on Capitol Hill and the Russia stuff, and you know, when you guys go to the coffee shop in downtown Vicksburg, are you talking about that?
Absolutely. I think everybody, I think, wants the ball to move down the field without as much chaos around it. But to be honest with you, Kai, and more focused on the economic side of what's going on right now, and try to see where I fit into this new strategy from an economic standpoint. So far, I like what I've seen. The energy around our business and the energy around mass freight in this country and as a whole has really increased. I think everybody was holding their breath for literally the last 2 years of the Obama administration to see what in the world was going to happen. At least there's a little clearer picture now than where there was 2 years ago, in my opinion.
Austin Golding, he runs or helps run, I guess, the Golding Barge Line. We got him in Vicksburg, Mississippi, just like we always do. Austin, thanks. We'll talk soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Today in Hey Look, there really is a market for everything. This item, Manhattan, got a new area code a couple of days ago. 332 joined 646 and 917 and the borough's original code 212, of course. That one has become something of a status symbol among New Yorkers, so much so that what's known as a secondary market has popped up to sell phone numbers that start with 212. Marketplace's Marielle Segarra reports.
Sherry Littlefield wants a 212 number.
I think if people saw that, they would just immediately know, oh, she lives in New York City.
Littlefield is sitting on a brown leather couch at Foley Gallery, a contemporary art space on Manhattan's Lower East Side, where she's associate director. Behind her is a photo of a pink rose, frozen in liquid nitrogen and shattered. The gallery has a 212 number. But in her side gig, curating art shows, Littlefield uses her personal cell phone, area code 321 from Florida. She thinks a 212 would get her more business.
It's kind of goofy, and I get that, but I think it carries prestige in the way, you know, an apartment off Fifth Avenue would.
Littlefield could ask her phone carrier for a 212 number, but they're about as rare as Fifth Avenue rent-controlled apartments. To explain why, let's go back to where a phone number begins its natural life, at a private organization called the North American Numbering Plan Administration. It comes up with the area codes for North American countries. John Manning is the senior director.
We'd like to think there was some wild and crazy way that we could tell you how we determine what the next area code would be. Quite frankly, it's fairly simple.
A team sits down and picks a number. Sometimes they come up with clever ones, like 321, Sherry Littlefield's phone number from Florida. It covers the area NASA rockets lift off from. Take an area code, like 321, and count up all the possible seven-digit combinations.
When you work out the math, you have up to 8 million telephone numbers in an area code.
The administration divvies those numbers up among phone companies like Verizon and Comcast, and those companies pass the numbers along to you. Eventually, they run out, and the only way to get one of these numbers from the phone company is if somebody else gives one up. But as so often happens in our economy, when there's a need, someone figures out how to meet it.
Thank you for calling call212numbers.com, your number one source for 212 area code.
There are websites like this one devoted to selling 212 numbers. You can also find people selling them on eBay and Craigslist for hundreds or even thousands of dollars. Another website, ringboost.com, sells phone numbers, mainly to businesses. Its cheapest 212s are $175. Its most expensive, almost $30,000. The price depends on how memorable the numbers are. Paul Faust, who's the company's vice president of business development and a New Yorker himself, says some people buy these numbers as collector's items.
I had a guy maybe a year ago that bought three of them because he wanted his kids, who were like 1 and 2 years old, to have them when they got older.
Faust hustles to snap up available numbers.
People who are moving out of New York that just don't want their numbers. A company that had a bunch that is going out of business, closing, and, you know, might want to get rid of them.
RingBoost parks thousands of phone numbers in an account with a phone company somewhere and then waits for them to be bought. RingBoost doesn't technically own these phone numbers. It owns the rights to use them. But apparently, that's just how phone numbers work.
No, you don't own your own telephone number. And in fact, even the telephone company doesn't own telephone numbers.
Sean Helms is a partner at the law firm McDermott, Will & Emery. He says phone numbers are a public resource. The FCC controls them. Sherry Littlefield from the art gallery has thought about buying a 212 number online, but she's worried about getting too many phone calls from people looking for the previous user.
I do find myself revisiting the website, even adding the number into my shopping cart sometimes, but I just can't commit to doing it.
In the meantime, she may ask her boss to sell her the company's fax number. In New York, I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, more clever congressional bill naming. Illinois Democrat Mike Quigley has introduced the Communications Over Various Feeds Electronically for Engagement Act to make presidential social media posts subject to the Presidential Records Act and its archiving and disclosure requirements. So, Communications Over Various Feeds Electronically for Engagement. Yes, COFEFE, if I'm pronouncing that right, from the president's now what is the pronunciation anyway? From the president's now infamous Twitter typo last month, of course. All right, we got to go. The Dow off 36 points today, about a 10%. NASDAQ down 32 points, about a 0.5% or so. S&P 500 down 2 points. Bupkis, really, percentage-wise. Our daily production team includes Bridget Bonder, Robert Garova, Jenny Josephson, and Daisy Palacios. I'm Kai Rizdal. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI?
Don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's a speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.